that. There's a black hole. Hi, everybody. My name is Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. /drugaddict.com/org. I hear that something's different done at this group. They record you, apparently, and you go on the internet. Well, I guess it's a lot better than going on America's Most Wanted. So, but if I would have kept drinking, that's probably where it would have ended up. They say you shouldn't forecast, you know, but I never learned that until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm truly grateful to be here. There's many places that I was in, I wasn't grateful. Prisons and mental institutions. All because I took a drink. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because the judge said, you know, it'd be better if you went to AA, you know. And I didn't come because the doctor said, if you don't stop drinking, you're going to go absolutely crazy or you're going to die. Or the nurses who would nurse me back to health after a severe bout with alcoholism. And it wasn't my mother that suggested that I should do something about my drinking. Oh, my father, my brother, my sister. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in one of the weirdest situations I've ever been in. It was one of the greatest mistakes I've ever made. I was working on the docks in 1973. I just got back here from England. I went to England. I'm a musician. And I went to England for a four-week tour and didn't come back for 4 years. Something to do with the pubs, you know. Don't ask me what Windsor Castle looked like. I know I was there. I know I played there. And but I don't remember what it looked like. I can't even tell you the Queen's first name. Anyway, I was born there. I was born in Scotland. And how can Scotland have a queen when it never had a king? Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's the only politics I'll go through right now. The gentleman from the south tonight, where I've been, I've played many a time in the southern states. I used to see these posters in New Orleans when I played down the street or up the street from Clarence Frogman Henry's Club in Bourbon Street. It was an old Civil War poster. It said, "Join the Army and see the North." So, here's the Robert E. Lee, you know. It looks just like my Uncle Huey, by the way. I guess in every country you go, you'll find that wandering Scotsman. And I've even been to San Antonio, to the Alamo, and where five Scotsmen lost their lives in the war with Mexico, General Santana, in 1836. Quite well read. Wherever the Scotsmans go, I always like to figure out how the hell they got there. But I know that this probably had a lot to do with it, you know. I was working down the docks. And I remember Big Ray used to meet me at 5 o'clock in the morning. It was the kind of job that where you went and you worked. And the reason people went there to work was they got paid the same day you worked. So I was not bondable in the bar situation. I was barred from every bar I ever played in, like the Cock and Bull and the Diana and all these other bars that I used to go in and sing a few songs at. And I remember I had to go and get a straight gig. So I started loading ships for Russia. They were Canadian Tire trucks. And I loved working on the docks. They had a written rule there. You can't work on the docks in the wintertime unless you bring your bottle. You could come on and go to work with a bottle. Well, here's an alcoholic's dream, you know. And not only am I working, I'm allowed to drink on the job. And I used to run into Big Ray at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, it was in January, and Big Ray would have a clean t-shirt on and be walking down the street, you know, and sometimes he would walk me to my job. And it was a sort of a waterfront job in a way. You'd go there, there'd be about 35, 40 guys there that day, most of them alcoholics, some of them not, but most of them alcoholics, and the guy would pick you. He'd say, "Okay, you go to Kraft Foods, you go to Mazda, you go to the docks, Kelly, because you seem to like it down there, you know." And you could get it's some serious shit down there because if you're unloading skins, you know, these are animal hides, and the smell was just horrendous, you know. And you'd work with these hides all day, and the smell would get on you. Boy, I had no trouble getting a seat on a bus on the way home. Unless I walked at home. And it was very close. I used to work out at Shed 52 in the B sheds. And I loved the whole atmosphere of the docks. And Big Red would come along and he'd say, "Let's see your bottle." And it had to be either gin or vodka. Now, the reason it had to be clear was because Big Red drank clear alcohol. And he would take your bottle and he'd take a couple of swigs and say, "Okay, continue." You know, he had to make sure. I remember the first day I worked there, I had a bottle. And he said, "What the hell is this shit?" And it was Southern Comfort. And he says, what are you doing with this? This is perfume. I says, no. I says, I'm in my Janis Joplin period right now, and I'm drinking. He says, no. He says, I'm not letting you stay on the dock. He says, there's a liquor store. He says, just up near Hochelaga. You go there right now, and you get yourself some decent alcohol. So I'm right, oh, sure. I mean, this is a job in paradise, you know? And sometimes we would get cases and cases of Courvoisier brandy, and one of the stevedores would drop a case, and it would smash, and we'd take them, and we'd take these nylons, and drain the stuff into cups, and we'd be smashed all day. I mean, I don't think I'll ever get another job like this again. And even if I did, you know, it's a no-no. You know, because it took me so long to get sober. But like I say, I didn't come here because the judge said, or my parents said, or the people that love me through an intervention tried to help me. A lot of people tried to help me, but nothing worked. Until one day, I'd taken my money, and I used to drink at the GTR Tavern. I worked for a company called Dock Personnel, and there's a blue-collar company, and that's the company that sent me to the docks. And it was a cold, cold January day. And I didn't feel like going into work that day. And you could do that at dock. So I took my wages from the day before, and I went into the GTR Tavern where I had all my pool buddies, and I sat there playing pool. Now, in those days, we used to drink this stuff called block and tackle. It was a bottle of Canadian sherry, which used to keep under the table in the draft room. And you would drink half a draft and then fill it up with Canadian sherry. We called it block and tackle, because when you drank this, you walk a block, you'll tackle anything. Maybe me. Anyways, I used to see Buddha on this stuff. I thought this stuff was great. Anyways, I had a big, big buffalo hat on and a big logging jacket. And I was drinking from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. I remembered I had to meet my girlfriend. It was my fiance at the time. I was engaged to marry the girl. I didn't have a pot to piss on. And I lived in St. Louis Square here on St. Denis Street. And I lived in a 12 by 10 room with 13 cats. And I started out with two, and then I'd let them out, and then they'd bring these friends back from the alley. And then they would mate. And then one day I woke up and there were 13 cats. I was living with, the place smelled like a Ponderosa, you know? And it was $35 a week just to feed them and change their litter. But my girlfriend liked cats, and I'd do anything my girlfriend wanted just to impress her. Anyways, one day, like I said, I didn't go to work, and I went into the GTR Tavern, and I got hammered there all day. And around 7 o'clock, quarter after 7 at night, I went outside. I was totally broke, and I hailed a taxi, and it was snowing. There was about 2 or 3 feet of snow on the ground at the time. And I hailed this taxi, and I got into it, and I said, take me to the corner of St. Denis and Prince Arthur. So the driver did. I remember going up Peel Street, and then up to St. Denis and Prince Arthur. And he says, well, we're here. And I got out of the taxi, and he said, hey, my fare. And I said, God will reward you in heaven, my son. I closed the door. Now, I had a plan, you know, because when I start drinking, I become Freud. You know, I become a really intelligent person. And I had figured, well, I'll run up the back of my place in the alleyway, and I'll sneak into the back of my place. And as I got out of the taxi and I said, God will reward you in heaven, my son, two cop cars came up behind him. So he's out there going, I've just been robbed. And in Montreal in those days in 73, the police would shoot first and then ask for ID. You know, so I ran up the alleyway, and they couldn't get their car to go up the alleyway and chase me because the alleyway hadn't been cleared yet for the snowmobiles, for the snow trucks. So I was running down the alleyway, and then it dawned on me that I had never seen the back of my place. You know, so I was puzzled. I said, Jesus Christ, where do I live? You know, and I saw this alcove with this round alcove thing, and I ran in there, and I said, well, I'll hide in there. And I ducked down, and I could hear the cop car going, trying to get up the alleyway. Anyways, I saw this kitchen door behind me, and I banged on the door. And this little guy with a brush cut came to the door, and he parted the curtain windows of the door, and he said, yeah, what do you want? I said, I want to talk to you. Open the door. And I was going to just push him aside, run through the kitchen, and then run right out his front door. Because I knew I lived somewhere close to this place that I was in. I lived at 3642 St. Denis at the time. Anyways, when I opened the door, the heat of the place almost knocked me over. It was just warm, and I was so drunk. And he said, what can I do for you, big guy? And I saw all these dishes and cups. And I said, well, I come here to do your dishes. He says, well, come on in. He said, we've got a pile here for you. He says, now put on that apron. I did. I did everything he told me to do. I put on the apron.
and I tied my hair back. I had hair down to here, and I tied it back. It's been a long time, eh? I tied it back, and I put it down my shirt, and I looked out the window, and I could see the police in the yard, up in the laneway with their flashlights looking for where I'd ran to, because, you know, I disappeared. Anyways, I figured, hey, I'm safe. So I went up, and I started to wash the dishes and do the cups, and they had this coffee urn, just like that one there. And they had it there, and the guy said to me, listen, he says, we're glad to have you on board. He says, but at 8:15, he says, I want you to put the dishes and the cups down and come on in, he says, because the meeting's going to start. And I said, yeah, right, the meeting. I forgot about the meeting, you know. And every time one guy would come up and he'd say, hi, how are we tonight? And I said, Christ, this is a really happy place, you know. Everybody here is happy and joyous, you know, and they've got rosy cheeks and they're healthy looking and nobody seems to be drunk, you know, and they're having coffee, you know. And I figured, oh, Jesus, Murphy, this is a gay club, you know, because there was nothing but guys. I saw nothing but guys. And I was going, where the hell am I? So anyways, at 8:15, I grabbed the coffee, and as I'm passing by these two guys, they're going, hi, how are we tonight? Well, we's on dishes, but I'm doing okay. So I took my coffee, and as I turned, I heard the guy talking about a car accident he'd got into, where he had smashed his car against this post. And as I looked in the alcove, I could see all these people in the living room. And I saw these huge gold letters, AA. And I said, like, car accident. I said, this is the Automobile Association. This is a club for defensive driving. Well, I sat down in the chair, and the guy up in the front said, he says, hi, my name is Angelo. And the other guy says, my name is Pony. And that's all I heard. I didn't hear, and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't hear that. Anyways, I passed out in the chair. Well, I woke up at 10:30. Startled. The place was empty. Gone. Everybody was gone. Except for the little guy who let me in. Anyways, I got up and I said, he was at the door shaking a guy's hand and said to the guy, keep coming back. And he said to me, you keep coming back too, big guy. And I said, oh no, I'll never drive again. I'll let the wife drive. You know, that's it for me. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. He didn't know what I was talking about. Anyways, when I got outside, I looked at the address and I ran into 3652 St. Louis. I ran two doors past where I lived with the 13 cats. And when I got to the door of my place, for some reason, a little light went on. Because when I was leaving the place, I looked on top of it, the fireplace, or the way they call a mantelpiece. On the fireplace, there was all the slogans. There but for the grace of God, live and let live, think. And I said, where have I seen those before? And it was there, it dawned on me where I'd be. I thought I was in an Alcoholics Anonymous house. Because that's when I had seen those slogans before. And where had I seen those slogans before? Well, one time I got into serious trouble over an assault charge. And my lawyer told me, go get your toothbrush and your comb. Because on Monday morning at court, you're going away. And I said, well, for how long is this holiday? He says, 2 years. I said, oh, Jesus, I can't do 2 years. I can't go without a drink for 2 days. He says, never mind. He says, go get it. He says, you know, that's the best thing that, you know, I could. Anyways, I took the sheet that he gave me to bring up on Monday morning at the club fed downtown, and I walked into this bar that I usually go to called Henri Richard's. And I had a group of friends. There were six friends as usual. And when I was broke, I'd go there, and, you know, and I'd just sit. And if you're a good listener, you can always have a drink spot for you, you know. And as I walked in, they saw me with the head down and the sheet under my arm. They said, Kelly, what's wrong? I said, oh, I don't want to bother you guys today. I'm in a lot of shit. They said, no, sit down. What's the problem? I said, well, my lawyer told me to get my toothbrush. I'm up on an assault charge, and he tells me I'm going away for 2 years. No, you're not. They said, no, you're not going anywhere. You sit down and have a couple of quarts. Well, all right. You know, I was down. You know, and on my fourth or fifth quart, they said to me, now, we're going to tell you exactly, because, you know, one's a judge, one's a lawyer, one's an astronaut, one guy's reading the same newspaper from 1950, you know, but still got it tucked under his arm, right? And I'm listening to these people. They said, now, we're going to tell you what to do. And you better do this, because this is going to save you from going to jail. So I said, okay. I said, you guys are my friends, and I'll listen to you. Well, sure enough, they said, are you ready to hear what we have to tell you? And I said, sure. Whatever it is you tell me to do, I'll do. And anyways, they said, do you know where the Allen Memorial is? And I said, yeah, it's a mental institution next to the Royal Victoria Hospital. They said, well, we want you to go there. And we want you to get a psychiatrist's letter saying that you are absolutely nuts. Okay? Now, when the judge is going to sentence you, you take this letter and you give it to your lawyer. Your lawyer gives it to the judge, and the judge says, I can't sentence this man to jail. This man has got to go to a hospital. The most you'll do in a hospital is 2 weeks in observation. And that sounded, hey, you know, these guys are really bright. So I said, okay. I said, I'll be right back. I said, hold my beer. I'll be right back. I'm going up to this place to go get my letter right now. So I rushed up to the mental institution, and as I walked through the door, have you ever seen the Alamore? It looks like Dracula's castle, you know? And it's got this big door with the big knockers on it, you know? And I go in, and I ring this little bell, ding, ding, ding. And up there, it's a different land, you know? They speak to you like this. Like, and how are we today? I said, we're in a hurry. I said, I'm drinking with my friends, so why don't you just type this for me, right? I, Kelly Gallagher, absolutely nuts. I'm seeing lions and tigers and zebras in the morning when I get up, and I'm throwing furniture around, and I'm absolutely crazy. Could you write that down? He says, well, we don't do things like that here. You'll have to see a psychiatrist. I said, well, go get him. Go get him. Hurry up. Can he type? Go get him. Because I need this letter. My friends are waiting for me at the Armory Richard Cabin. Well, you'll have to take it. And I will call the psychiatrist. So I sat down, and now it's going 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Now I really got to pee, but I don't want to pee in case I lose my turn in line. So I went up to the girl, and I ring the bell again. Ding, 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 right? And she comes up. She says, yes, can I help you? I said, yeah, I saw you about 2.5 hours ago. I said, I'm absolutely nuts. I need a piece of paper stating that I'm nuts. I said, now go and get a fucking psychiatrist right now, or I'll turn this joint upside down. Well, you just hold on a minute. And she went under the desk, and she pressed this, I guess it's an emergency button, because out came these two big Greek guys, you know, wearing white, and they grabbed me, and they said, you come with us, right? You know, I figured, well, these guys must be the psychiatrists, you know? So, sure enough, I see this guy with a beard come into the room, and he's going like this. And he goes, what seems to be the problem? You know, now I'm meeting Count Dracula. I figure this is Dracula's capital. Here we go. He says, what seems to be the problem? I says, well, listen, I says, I don't know if you can type or not, but you better get that bitch out there in the front, because somebody's going to type me a letter stating that I'm absolutely nuts. And he says, just a minute. He says, I want you to talk to somebody. And he goes and he gets a little woman. And she comes in and she's going like this, only she doesn't have a beard, right? She's going like this. She says, you seem very irritable. You know, I says, well, I am irritable. I've been here for 3 fucking hours. I have to pee. I want to type a letter. My friends are waiting for me down at Armory Richard. I got 2 quarts getting hot on the table, and I'm getting hot. She says, just a minute. And they went into a little conference. So meanwhile, in the meantime, I'm standing there in a Johnny jacket. That's all. No clothes on, and this Johnny jacket. And then the doctor says something. He says, listen. He says, well, I'd like to treat you with some drugs. I said, far out. Finally, somebody who understands me. You know? I says, what's the name of this drug? He says, Largactyl. I says, really? I says, what is it? He says, it's made from snake poison. I says, what's the side effects? He says, well, you turn purple, and you shake in your hands. And the joints are very stiff, just like a snake bite. It was. He was absolutely right. But Jesus, Murphy, 35 days later, I'm still in the Al Memorial with the Johnny jacket on. And I can't even remember why I'm there. You know, and I'm walking. I'm not walking anymore. I'm holding my jacket. And I'm doing this thing because it's the most powerful medication that you can give anybody. It's the greatest of human tranquilizers that you can give. It's a major, major tranquilizer. And I can't walk anymore. I'm doing this thing that they call the Largactyl shuffle. And that's the way I was for 35 days. And your voice, you know, it's not a normal voice. You take on a deeper toned voice. You know, I didn't sound like Kelly anymore. I sound more like Darth Vader, you know. And it was a kind of a place, you know, like with you'd be mixed in with people who were on mood elevators and other kinds of tranquilizers. And it was a real hassle. Like, you know, if you're trying to go to the cafeteria to eat, by the time you got there, there was nobody else in the cafeteria. They had all finished, so I used to eat alone. You know, and then when they called you, Kelly, could you come here, please? And then you get the little Jewish girl with the Adidas on going, and 1 minute, 2, and 1 minute, Jesus, Murphy. You're lucky you weren't in their building. Anyways, 40 days later, they decide to give me a pass. But when I was in there, that was where I saw those slogans. One doctor nailed me right on the money. He said, "You're an alcoholic." I said, "Well, Jesus Christ, I could have told you that. Why didn't you ask me that 40 days ago? You know? In the meantime, I'm loaded with this largactyl drug. I've turned purple, and I'm shaking in my hand, and stiffening up the joints. I've been bitten by 100 snakes, you know? So they let me go for a 4-hour pass. It was just incredible. Now, what's an alcoholic going to do when they let him out on a 4-hour pass? He's going to go drinking. And I can remember the head nurse yelling at me from the top of the hospital. I thought she said, "Make sure you have a ball." She was saying to me, "Don't mix this medication with alcohol." And I thought, "Yes, have a ball." Yeah. Well, let me tell you, yeah, 3 days later, they find me in Mount Royal chasing deer, you know? And they take me back to the hospital. And that doctor told me, he said, "You're an alcoholic. How'd you like to go to a meeting?" And I did. I went to a meeting. And they had these chairs just like it was, and that's where I'd seen those slogans. And I take you back to that night again, in January, where I remembered where I was. And when I opened that door of my place with the 13 cats, and my girlfriend said to me, "Where the hell have you been? You were supposed to be here at 4:30. I said, "Sit down, Olga, you won't believe this." I said, "I just came from a club called Alcoholic Anonymous." And when I said that, she went, "Whoopee!" I said, "What do you mean, whoopee?" She says, "Well, Kelly, there's a wild bear shit in the woods." I mean, she says, "Come on." I says, "Oh, no, I'm not alcoholic." You see, an alcoholic is... You remember when we passed Atwater Park, we see the guy with the old brown coat on, and he's got a brown paper bag with a bottle in it? And as I'm explaining this to her, I look over in the chair, and there's this old brown coat with a brown paper bag with a bottle in it, you know? I said, "That's an alcoholic." Anyways, I never went to AA until about a year later. I finally married that little girl, and one night with the tears were rolling down my eyes from the frustration in stage 4 of alcoholism, as we all know, delirium tremors, and death, a near-death story. And I needed this program, I can say, way, way back when. But you get it when you get it. And don't rush it. Don't rush it, because it won't come in your time. And I'm the type of guy that if I got something overnight, I'd lose it by 9 o'clock in the morning. So it's been a long journey, a long process. I should explain to you, I've just taken my 16-year cake a couple of months back, and it's just a miracle for me to realize that I've come through what I've come through in 30 to 35 years of drugs and alcohol in the music business. And I know you know that there's drugs rampant and alcohol always on hand in the entertainment industry and music industry. Not that it's not everywhere else. It is. But it was me. And I think I geared toward that kind of a life. And I'm here today by the grace of God. And only by the grace of God. I did nothing spectacular. This is not me. When I first came here, it was all about me. But I'm happy to report today that it's all about us. We told me, "Yeah, I'm not alone anymore. I don't have those, you know, this is a disease, it's a baffling disease in the sense that it's the kind of disease that tells you, yes, you do have an alcohol problem, and you know what, you're the only one in the world that has it." You know, it's self-centeredness with marked with low self-esteem. And I used to think, how can something, you know, react compassionately with each other when one is off the veil, but they're not. Low self-esteem and self-centeredness are basically in the same bout. And I had this disease, and it had me. And I could quit the drugs, and I could stop the pills, but I couldn't stop drinking. And you can't have two gods. It taught me you can't have two gods. You either love one and hate the other. And alcohol was my drug. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself at one time in my life. It would still destroy me today if I pick up a drink. I know through experience that if I ever pick up a drink, because this has happened to me, that if I ever pick up a drink, it would be 30 or 40 or 50 times as bad as it was when I last quit. How bad was it when I quit? I was living in a cardboard box in Atwater Park. And my last drink was actually a refusal of a drink. I was drinking with a lad from Newfoundland named Francis Lush. And we used to go and stem all night and bum money. this is the big entertainer, the big oh, I, me, mine guy. You know, stemming for money so we could get a bottle of Bellini. You know, 16 proof. You know, 16% alcohol, $8.25. And we used to get it at 6 o'clock. We'd go through 8 or 9 bottles a night or a day, and we'd go to Sid's Depanneur at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he'd sell it to us for an extra couple of shekels. And as he gave me the bottle, he put it on in my hand, and I undid the top, and as I went to drink it, I was right across the street from the Children's Hospital. And this voice came into me, and it said, my, well, look what we have here. Here in this hospital, Kelly, we have probably 130, 140 little babies, innocent little babies dying and suffering. And here you are, sitting on a park bench doing this to yourself. And it was the first time in a long time that clarity had come between these two pipes. You know, and I knew right away I'd be hit by the truth. It was the truth. I was doing this to myself through no fault of my own. But I was still doing it to myself. So I put the cap back on the bottle and I gave it to this little lad named Francis Lush. And he said, what's wrong with you? He says, come on, get it down yet. Because as sick as I was, I knew that I couldn't drink anymore. He says, where are you going? I hand him back the bottle. I said, I'm going back to where I belong, meaning the confines of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people that make up AA. And these were my people. These were the people I should be with. Not 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the night, looking for a place to crash in between two bushes, hoping that my shoes are still on my feet when I wake up, hoping that nobody knifes me, you know? Living in fear, total fear, the anticipation of pain. And I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous in 3 days. I went up to this German landlady's place that I used to have, and I rang her buzzer because I didn't have a penny. And she opened her door, and her name was Mrs. Molnar. And she says,
yes?
I says, yeah. I says, Mrs. Molnar, she says, do you want to stop drinking, eh? Have you had enough? And that's the way she spoke. Yes, Mrs. Molnar. She's speaking to you, yeah. The Fuhrer's come home, you know? She says, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll give you room 10 upstairs. I said, look, she says, do you want me to check on you? And I said, no, just give me 3 days. If I don't come out of the room in 3 days, come and get me. So I went up to room 10, turned the key, locked the door. And I remember those hot, I stopped drinking June the 23rd. And just by June the 26th, the sweat was pouring. I was bleeding from every orifice in my body, my nose, my throat, my arse, everywhere. I had wine sores covered my body. But I knew I couldn't drink, and I knew I shouldn't leave that room. I could hardly even walk. I couldn't eat. I was throwing up. Everything. There was my insides were all over the room, and what if I couldn't make the sink? And I struggled on the third day. I struggled and went out to the CLSD clinic. And as I walked down the stairs of the Guy Street clinic, the doctor saw me and he said, Kelly, are you off? And I said, yeah. He says, how long has it been? I said, 3 days. He says, good, come here. Because they all knew me. He said, drop your drawers. And he gave me a nice big shot of gamma globulin in the buttocks. And he says, now go and get yourself a couple of cans of soup and start eating. Try and eat. And that was tough too. But for 2 years, I suffered like that. Sick. Felt like I was dying and wished I was dead. You know? Sick. But I didn't stop there. I went and got myself a sponsor. I did all the things that they asked me to do in AA. Get a sponsor. Get active. Get yourself a job. You know? So I did. I went and I washed dishes and cut potatoes in a restaurant with a couple of guys that I knew. And the reason they gave me the job is because I could leave the job anytime I liked during the day and go to a meeting. And I was making about 14 meetings a week. But that's what I needed at the time. That's what I wanted. And I just kept continually going to meetings and going to meetings, and eventually I started to feel a little better. And things began to happen. This guy walked in one day and he says, are you Kelly? I said, yes. He says, well, listen, Kelly. He says, I own Dunkin' Donuts up the street. He says, I'd like you to come and work for me. I says, well, I don't know how to cook donuts. He says, yeah, that's okay. He says, I want you to be my bouncer. said, bouncer? I said, Christ, how bad are your donuts, you know? He says, no, they have at the forum, it's right next door to the forum, and they have these heavy metal bands play there, and these guys come in with these bolts through their noses, and I said, oh yeah, you know, these heavy metal dudes. He says, I want you to keep them out of the washroom, because every time they go in the washroom, they shoot up in there, and they break my toilets and that, and they're going to get closed. So he says, if you could go there and prevent this, he says, I'd be very grateful. I'll pay you, $5 an hour. I said, sure, fine. So I had two jobs in 2 years. And a funny thing happened one night. I used to fight with the police a lot. And one night, this cop that I used to fight with a lot, named Frank Damian, he came in one night for some donuts, and I was in the back. So I said, let me handle this. And I had my little Dunkin' Donuts suit on, and I had the donuts in a box. And 12 donuts, and I went out there with him, and I said, here's your donuts, Frank. And he went, thank you. And he went, Christ, he says, come here. He says, what are you doing here? He says, and he opened the box. He says, here, you eat one first. He didn't trust me. I says, no, Frank, I'm 2 years sober now. He says, I don't believe you. Show me something. I says, I showed him my chip. And he says, oh, he says, that's fantastic. He says, I can finally stop, looking for you. I says, because nobody knew where you were for 2 years. I said, yeah, I know. I said, but this time I think I'm on the right track. And he says, well, anything I can do for you. And things begin to happen. People that hated you and disliked you and that begin to come across and started to trust you. And that's where trust began. And that's basically what it was. God taking your soul, polishing it up, giving it back to you and saying, here, go out and do your best. You know, my sobriety is a gift to you. What you do is a respect to me. And that's basically what the spirituality of the group was for me. You know, it was trust. And to get that trust back was a great feeling. Then one day, something crazy happened. I met a friend of mine from the program, Phil. I met him in the campus downtown. And I saw he had a blue shirt and a blue pair of pants on. I said, geez, you look great, Phil. I said, is that your uniform? He says, yeah. I says, what do you do? He says, I work here at the university. I says, well, I says, what do you do? He says, I mop floors. He says, I clean. He says, I'm happy with the thing and shit. I'm sober. I says, yeah, you look it. And I was just 2 years sober at the time. So I says, what are you doing? I says, oh, I'm delivering. I'm feeding donuts up here and making croissants. I couldn't even spell croissants. I says, I wash dishes during the day. He says, oh, he says, why don't you go and fill in an application? Well, I'm a musician. We don't fill applications in. You go by word of mouth. You know, you have to be bonded though. You know, you can't shoot up bars of that, because you get a bad reputation. Anyway, I went into the university. I hadn't filled an application in 35 years. And anyways, I just followed the program to the best of your ability. And I filled this application out, and the girl said, don't worry. She says, we might not be calling you because we don't need anybody. And I said, that's fine. I got two jobs. And anyway, I said, grace of God, and I left. Well, 3 days later, my phone goes. And this guy says, hello. He says, is this Kelly? I says, yeah. He says, Kelly, he says, my name is Tom Haynes. He says, I'm the head of the mason and decorating department of the university here. I says, oh, yeah. I thought it was some friends of mine, making a joke because I put an application in at the university. So I says, yeah, what can I do for you? He says, well, he says, I see on your application you have a little bit of experience with cement. I said, yeah, that's right. He says, are you any good? I says, well, they can't find Jimmy Hoffa. And I hung up, right? Well, then it dawned on me that maybe this is too legit, Maybe this is too legit to quit. So I phoned back to university and I said, you got a Tom Hayes there? They said, just a moment, please. And I said, Jesus Christ. And I ran down to the university. And as I ran up to his office there, next to the personnel office, there he was. He said, you Kelly? And I says, yeah, I'm Kelly. He says, come on in. He says, you're a very funny guy. He says, I'm reading your application here. He says, where were you in the 60s? There's a big blank space. I just left it blank. I says, well, I can't remember. He says, yeah, but what about the 70s? I said, they were like the 60s, only more so. He says, and what do you mean by this up here? Sex, yes. He says, look, he says, I got to be honest with you. He says, but you're what we call a risk, And I really couldn't hire a guy like you, he says, because you have such a bad work record, I feel bad for you, He says, I don't need anybody coming in here playing lead guitar at 8 o'clock in the morning. He says, I need a guy who can do the masonry and that. I said, well, look. I said, thank you very much for your time and effort. And I turned around and I went to the door. And when I got to the handle of the door, I'm going, I've got my medallion in my hand, my 2-year medallion, I'm going, grace of God, grace of God, grace of God. And as I turn the door, he says, come here for a minute. He says, tell me something personal about yourself. I says, well, I don't drink and I don't do drugs. He says, okay, I'll tell you why. He says, I'll give you 2 weeks' work. 2 weeks' work. That's all. Don't ask me for any more. So I said, okay. And then now I'm making a salary, 3 times the salary I'm making from 2 jobs. And I've got 2 weeks of this work. And he happened to like what I did. And he came to me after 2 weeks. And I figured, well, here goes. I'm out the gate now. This is where he walks me to the gate. You know, dead man walking. You know. So he said to me, look, he says, the guy who you're replacing, he's not coming back for about at least another month. He said, would you like to stay on for us? I said, sure, fine. So 1 month led to 2 months, and then 3 months. And lo and behold, the guy that I was replacing died. So I was there 2 years. And the job got posted up on the board, and I applied for it. But this other guy with 30 years experience got the job. And I was on my way out the gate again. But when he went for his medical, the doctor there said he had low blood sugar. So they failed him on the medical, and the job came right to me, because I was second in line. Grace of God. You know, I don't think God spites somebody else just to help, but the opportunity's there. And that's one thing you're going to have to do. If your arm is folded, watch for the opportunities, because there will be many. You know, they said many are chosen, but few are selected. I'm waiting for Robin to come in. Anyway, it doesn't matter how you get here. I just explained that to the people. I came in the back door of AA too, so. Anyway, so now it's been, I'm happy to report, I've been at the university now for 15 years. You know, a guy that was helpless and hopeless and, you know, the thing that some of the people said was the best thing for him would be a straight jacket and a padded cell. You know, I've had both of them, you know? And the people that said things like that, well, half of them aren't with us anymore, and the other half don't look too good. You know? So open up your hearts. You know, I got a sign on my, just above my barrack box that says, how about a nice cup of shut the fuck up? You know, think before you speak. And that seems to be a pretty good model to have, especially up there at the university. Today I'm happy to report I'm a fully qualified brain surgeon. Not really. But I'm still at the job, and I'm a foreman now of the department that I'm in. I've been given a $5,000 raise. Am I talking about me? I'm the guy, this is the guy that walked in, it's, you know, where the boss told me I was a risk. A risk, and I couldn't get hired because I was a risk. How can I not be grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for where it's brought me through? Give it a chance. Give it a chance. Like I say, many are chosen, but few are selected. It behooves me that, you know, just to know that problem I had was powerlessness. And that the answer could be simple as something as power. And AA showed me, Alcoholics Anonymous showed me where to find that power. In the steps. Came to believe. And as simple as it is, you know. Except the Irish Air Force. Anyway, I think I'll just quieten off now. I think I've gone over my time. Keep coming back. It'll work. I mean, you got to work it, you know. Go out and do something with your hands during the day. Keep your mind busy. Get into a routine. You know, get that sponsor, get active, do all the things you ask you to do. It'll come back in flowers, in roses. You'll see. Where is Sean? Sean? I just want to thank you for letting me have the opportunity tonight to share my story with my fellow members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to leave you now with a little prayer from Psalms that I learned in jail of all places, you know. Well, one day I was fooling around with this thing called the Bible, and it dropped on the floor and opened its sounds. But I always remember this chapter that I read, and this was almost 18 years ago. And it was more or less, it describes the sojourn of my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it goes like this. But as for me, I'm like a green olive tree in the house of God. I will trust in His loving kindness forever, and I will give Thee thanks forever because Thou hast done it. And I will wait on Thy name, for it is good in the presence of Thy godly ones. God bless you. Thank you.